Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Becker on Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday morning. ESPN 102.5 The Game. John Hines, Predators head coach, will join us at 11 o'clock. But right now, we talk to the head coach of Vanderbilt Baseball, Tim Corbin, is on the line. Good morning, Corbs. How you doing?
Good morning, D. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. How's quarantine life with you and the fam?
Good. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's fine. We got a good routine going and staying in touch with the players and kind of following the next draft with Major League Baseball. So, yeah, we still have a lot going on right now.
I know you can't let yourself go down this rabbit hole, but you're the defending national champions, and you had a loaded team coming back. And I know we were talking to you, in fact, the day before basically everything got canceled. You're getting ready to start up a series against Kentucky. How do you try to keep that out of your head? You're a coach. You've been doing this a long time. The what if game, man, I wonder if this team could have repeated. I mean, how do you keep those thoughts out of your head, or do you go down that rabbit hole during these times?
Yeah, I keep them out by just not thinking about them, I guess, is the simplest way to think about it. And moving forward, what is it going to look like next year? I almost look at last year, unfortunately, as a growing period to the next year, even though you'll be missing parts and guys won't be part of the same experience. But at the same time, just look at it as a way to move forward for next year. And I think early on in this process, when we lost the season, it is probably enough time that I spent thinking about it in disappointment. And really what I found myself doing is it didn't really do any good. I mean, you can feel sorry for the kids that missed out, but as I told the players right away, that there's a lot of people missing out on a lot of things, that are far more extreme than a baseball season. So we have to put things in the proper perspective and just continue to move forward as best we possibly can. And that's really what I've chosen to do during this time.
What has been the response during this time when speaking to your players, whether they're going to be back next year or they're going to be leaving the program to get drafted high in Major League Baseball? What's been kind of the communication between you and your boys?
Pretty neutral, to be honest with you. I mean, there's communication, but there's not a lot of answers for them, and they may not be looking for any right now, but I think they're in a state of wonderment too, because even in the not so distant future, there's a potential summer baseball league for them, which is probably a coin toss right now, whether or not they'll play. And then we're talking about the entryway back into school again. And then we're talking about summer school. And there's just a lot of question marks for these kids right now on what's the next step for them. But they're getting itchy. They want to do something. I mean, I understand it. 18 and 19 and 20 years old, and they've got all this energy. And you can only do so many push-ups. You can only do so much distance running and so on. It's time for them to do something else. And they're communicating with one another, but at the same time, they want to see one another. And there's the best medicine for any of us is human relationships and connections. And that's what they're looking for. And we have to be patient because they're there. They're in front of us. But they want them now, and I get that.
Every mock draft I've looked at in Major League Baseball has Austin Martin basically a top two, top three, top five, the latest pick in the draft. What did Austin – I know we've talked to you about him over the years, but what did he mean to your program? What did it mean to you to coach him?
Well, he's just a very good competitor, very good player in – when he was here as a freshman and sophomore, the freshman and sophomore, those were just academic tags. But beyond that, he was a key player the minute he walked in here. So those academic tags never applied to him because he was so competitive that He just involved himself. He's the only player we've had since I've been here that's played every position on the baseball field with the exception of pitcher and catcher. And he did it willingly, and he did it as a freshman, and he did it not knowing what he was going to do on that day. And the conversations I would have with him before a game is, Austin, you fine if I put you over at first base? He goes, yeah, fine, don't worry about it. He says, I just want to play. And then he played, but he became a marksman with a barrel. He's just one of those kids who could hit the ball on the barrel the minute he stepped on the field for batting practice to the time he got into a game against very good pitching. And when I get questions about him, that's the area that he's going to be able to do, and I would say relatively quick at a high level. And he can really, really run the bases. So you're talking about a very good offensive player. Defensively, you're just going to need to find a position for him. But once you stick him in a position, he's going to be fine because he's going to get a lot of repetitions. But the one thing he does is he competes. And we've all been glued to the TV on Sunday night watching one of the best, if not the best, competitor to ever play. But when you see that, you start understanding what that is and what the elements of that person looks and acts like. And they're rare. They're rare people, but they're guys who can really control their adrenaline, and they can command their adrenaline when it matters most. And Austin had that knack when he was playing baseball here at Vanderbilt.
How much does that go into what you do? Is that a normal thing of you asking kids to play lots of different positions? Is that you testing a kid? Tell me how that works. Is that a something you do with a lot of kids, or is that just something you did with Austin Martin? I mean, I know Tony Kemp played. Just take me through over the years. Is that something maybe early on in their career you kind of move them around and see, you know, what they look comfortable at the best, or how does that work?
Yeah, because I think I do it in camp too. I tell all of them with the parents seated is, be a baseball player first. You know, forget about sticking yourself or pigeonholing yourself as a position player or a certain position. Be a baseball player. Be one of those guys who opens up his equipment bag and say, I can play first, I can play second, I can play short, I can play third. Because if you have a willingness, first of all, a mental willingness to play any position, then you right away can be a team player. But number two, you start learning the different facets and angles of the game. And I think that's so important for a young person. So to your question is, yes, we move every single player during the course of the fall. I tell them that they're going to be baseball players. You're going to play with a 12-inch glove. You can play with a 10-inch glove. You're going to learn how to play on the right side of the diamond, the left side of the diamond. Now, if you're left-handed, then you are pigeonholed to some degree because you're a first baseman. But as going back to the story of recruiting David Price and watching David Price for the first time, I saw him at shortstop. And you'd say, well, left-handed people don't play shortstop. And then when I went down and asked Chuck, the head coach at the time, why is he playing? He said, he's my best athlete. He can play shortstop better than anyone else that we have. I thought to myself right then and there that people should at least practice or train there, because what a left-hander does by playing on that side of the field is they have to adjust their feet. That's why they never play that position, because there's too much foot movement. But if you train your left-handed first baseman at shortstop and first base, what you do is you make them throw, you make them have range, and you make them move their feet at an angle that they're going to have to move at some point when they're playing at first base. But at the same time, you're exposing them to a side of the field that is really going to enhance their development. And it goes into my thought process too, Dee. I know I'm talking too much, but it goes into my thought process of being a multi-dimensional athlete too, because if you play other sports, you're really training your mind and your body to be an athlete.
No, I love it. I'm fascinated by your answer. I steal your material for our team all the time. I at least give you credit, though. I don't try to take it that it's mine. I said, Tim, I got this from Tim Corbin. Yeah. But I steal your material all the time. I'm taking notes when you're talking.
Yeah.
Willie?
Thank you.
We're talking to Tim Corbin, head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. And Corbs, we're going to pick your brain for guidance here as well. As you mentioned, you know, you got young players that have been pent up.
Yeah.
for a while here. They want to play or train and do the right things. We all, as parents and coaches, I'm sure, want to do it safe. But there's a lot of return to play things starting to happen now, right, at a lot of different levels. So just if you're put in that position and you're a coach of a youth league team or a travel team and you got parents saying, hey, you know, we'd like to play. What can we do? What are some of the things that you would be thinking about when trying to put together a practice that would be safe? How would you go about that?
Well, I think, yeah, and we've all thought a lot about it because you can hear one side of the spectrum, the other side of the spectrum. I just think that both Maggie and I and the girls, we never want to live life scared, but at the same time, we want to live life respectfully. And it's like when you hop on a bike and you're going on the highway, you got a rearview mirror, you got your helmet, and you ride with caution. And I think that's how you handle this particular situation too, is kids are going to want to be kids. And I think it's a great opportunity to start using your own personal awareness and your personal responsibility to start to forge into, as we get going, more group activity, but doing it in a way that's going to provide education for the kids in terms of cleanliness and how to approach certain things. I've been thinking a lot about this in terms of when we get our kids back and when we're in a classroom. I told Maggie, I said, this might be a great situation for us in the fact that we should never really get a cold or a flu again, not because we're going to live life and wash our hands with every little thing, but just be more aware of where we're sticking our hands, what we're doing, and so on. But to your point, I think we can start moving into this. I'm not anyone, but I just think at some point in time, kids have to be kids. They have to move around, and I think they have to get together at some point. And I think that's coming. I think that's sooner than later, particularly when this weather starts improving. But I think it's also a great opportunity for us before we get into those things of really educating parents and kids on how we're going to proceed moving forward. So, yeah, I see it as a great growth opportunity.
I know customarily for the summer, there's a period of time where a lot of college evaluators, recruiters like yourself and all the schools you mm-hmm. compete with are out on a circuit watching youngsters play at the different sites. And you got a lot of people from all over a region or even the country. So what have you been told right now? Who decides when it's right and when it's safe to, you know, put on tournaments like that and evaluate kids? I mean, this is different. I know there's a lot of people wondering what's coming in the next few months. I don't know if we have all the answers right now.
Well, we've got an answer in terms of NCAA, and we cannot recruit until June 30th. So they backed that date up. So we can't be on the road until that time. And I would expect that's probably going to be pushed back a little bit more too. I've heard September, but you know, maybe not. You know, maybe we'll be able to get out there again, but I think like everything else, if you are able to recruit, there's no way you can get any type of equality because there's so many state lines being crossed and so many states that have different versions of health. Then we just have to respect that as a whole right now. So I think tournaments will go on in certain parts of the country. I've spoken to a lot of summer coaches and they want to get back into it, and they are going to get back into it. But as in terms of being evaluated, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, doesn't really matter the sport. There is not an NCAA college coach that can go out on the road right now until June 30th.
Hmm. Again, maybe looking at things a different way and trying to find positives, as you were just talking about in the case of, you know, in a classroom setting and better habits with mm-hmm. cleanliness and all that stuff. I've always felt, and I don't know how you feel about it, sometimes we get too caught up in how playing all these games over the course of a summer. I think regardless of whether we're talking about baseball or basketball, sometimes there's been a lot of criticism that you play too many games and you don't have enough practices. And maybe this mm-hmm. is an opportunity before people are ready to get in and mix it up with large groups of people yet, that it's a great opportunity to work on some little things and get some repetitions that way and develop in a different way.
There's absolutely zero doubt about that. I mean, you could do so many competitive type skill events inside of a training activity that would really, really help kids. And you don't need another colored uniform. You don't need a scoreboard. You don't need an umpire. You can do a lot of these things, same things that we do here on a day-to-day basis, is just creating activity and creating competitive environments and putting points on things where things matter. And I think the competition piece is important for kids. It's just competing against a drill more than anything else. Rather than compete against an opponent, it's competing against a drill, and you find yourself getting better, whether it's efficiency, whether it's cleanliness of how you're handling the ball, whether it's striking the ball somewhere on the ball. We've done a lot of things here at Vanderbilt, and I just ground ball scrimmage. We play a little ground ball scrimmage, and it's the most competitive game that we have in the training environment, because you have to hit the ball on the ground. And by hitting the ball on the ground, there's speed all over the field. If you hit it by an infielder, you get a certain amount of points. But because you're hitting the ball on the ground, there's tons of defensive activity too. So what you're doing is you're forcing bat control at the plate, and you're forcing defensive activity from infielders and outfielders for that matter. But we do that at camp too, but there's just so many things you can do to create fundamental activity that will actually improve the fundamentals of a player and increase their athleticism too, because you're making them move with efficiency.
Got one more for you on the draft. You've had plenty of players get drafted in the first five rounds, but you've had plenty that have been drafted beyond that. What's going to happen? Is it going to be like the 1950s for guys, you know, the first guy that doesn't get picked at the end of the fifth round, I would think might have some pretty good negotiating power. So what happens to all those kids that customarily would be drafted in rounds 6 through 40?
Well, they still can sign. But they can sign for a maximum of $20,000. So, you know, financially, you're not talking about a lot of money, because once Uncle Sam walks away with most of it, then that's what's in your pocket, and that's what you're going to use to play minor league baseball. I think the thing about minor league baseball at this point right now for a young man is you're not going to play. You're not going to play until next year. So you've got some more waiting to do before you play professionally again. The other thing that I think is real is when these minor leaguers come back, there's going to be more volume of players, but there's going to be less teams. And that's going to happen too, which means it's going to be way more competitive. So the draft as we knew it last year and as we know it right now is significantly different, but it is going to be different from this point forward. And what COVID did is it probably made a lot of organizations reinvent themselves. And I think Major League Baseball is one of them. And they've looked at their system and they've looked at it, the potential of, okay, if we cut out some minor league teams, what replaces the minor league teams? What replaces the development? And that right now is going to be college baseball, because there's going to be more volume in college baseball too, which is problematic with rosters. But I guess what I'm saying is you're going to see less numbers involved in the draft futuristically and less teams, and it being more competitive at the top than it is right now. Because really what you have in minor league baseball right now is you have prospects, but the prospects are minimal in comparison with the suspects. And the suspects are on teams. They're good players, but they're not prospects. They're put in place so the prospects can develop. And when you're a 15th rounder, a 16th rounder, yeah, you could get to the big leagues, but you're a low percentage player that gets there. You know, the resources typically and the attention is turned towards the kids that the program or the organizations have spent a lot of money on. So what you're going to have is less and less of a draft as we go forward.
Tim Corbin is with us, Vanderbilt baseball coach, and as I listen to you talk about this and how Major League Baseball is having to reinvent themselves, so to speak, in college baseball, and we've talked about this before, Tim, I think in some ways it's a good thing, because we have an opportunity, whether it was a forced one or not, the opportunity is here for everybody to take a step back and look, okay, what's been working, what can work better, what can we change completely, and my hope is all of these organizations, both professionally and collegiately, are doing that. And from what you're saying, it feels like they are. And I think that's a good thing.
I think it's a great thing because I think you'll learn how to be more efficient as a group too. I mean, we're learning that personally. We're learning that we probably don't need a whole lot to have a lot of fun. We've got great insight to our kids that we've never had before, which is great, and your wives for that matter. And I'm sure some it's benefited. Others, you probably find out who you really are. But I think from an organizational standpoint, and we've got a big call this afternoon, college baseball, in terms of coaches, and we're talking about a format. We're talking about format of the season, and format of the season actually being pushed back deeper into the spring because of the money-making effects that it would have on organizations and also the improvement of weather for the northern schools. So that's something that we're talking about. Will it ever happen? I don't know if it'll ever happen, but if it's going to happen, it might happen right now, because what you're looking at is the potential of a lot of things being pushed back. And if college baseball were pushed back, let's say 3-4 weeks, then it moves it deeper into the summer. It separates itself from college basketball. And what it does is it becomes a very good precursor to college football as well. So to your question, I think a lot of people are going to start looking at their organizations now and ways to improve it, because you got time to do it and you've got enough time to actually think about it and really break it down well.
Does having, and I've seen you on the KBO, the Korean Baseball League broadcast on ESPN, and we've been watching that. It's nice to actually see live baseball, but how beneficial is it for the major leagues, for college, even though they're run differently, to have a model that if there aren't fans next season for college baseball or what have you, to have that model in place in Korea that we can see back here and maybe get some ideas from? How important is that?
I think it's important because I think anytime something's done in front of you first, you can look at it for what it is. You can look at it pragmatically and say, okay, we're watching it. We're watching it closely. Now it's making you think of things that you can actually see without, they're not a mystery. So I think that situation is important. Can it work? Sure. Yeah, it can work. It certainly can, you can create a game. You can create games that have television that can keep people entertained too. And I think at this point right now, people would do anything for live entertainment on TV, especially if you're a sports fan. So I do. I think that's important to see. Is it reality here in our country? I think it could be. I'd love to see fans, even if there were just a few. But how that happens, I'm not sure. But I do think that's important, because that may be a precursor to what football looks like. It might be a precursor to what basketball looks like, or hockey for that matter, until. And so, yeah, any experience like that does help.
Did I see you a part of a KBO broadcast here the other morning?
You did.
Okay.
Yep.
He's famous. Yeah.
Are you allowed to root for a team in the KBO? We've picked our teams. Do you have a team in the Korean Baseball League?
No, I don't. I don't have a team. I follow some of the Americans. Preston Tucker, actually, a kid who played at Florida, was a very good hitter. He's leading their league in hitting right now.
Oh wow!
So,
okay.
Yeah, that's good for them. But there's just a sprinkle of American kids, so it's. I can't get there. I mean, it's good baseball, and, the Koreans play well. I was talking about that on the air the other day, and they were asking me about Korean baseball and had a little experience with them, having played them when I was a coach at Team USA in 2000 and in Team USA in 2006, too. And they play the game well. They do. They play the game well. They're more physical than the Japanese, and there's some similarities on their rhythms and how they play, but the Japanese are the best foreign teams I've ever seen. That was exciting. And when we went over there in 2009, whoa, what an education that was to play those teams. You play college teams over there, and we played the four best. You didn't ask this either. But the roster sizes of those college teams, we brought over 35 guys. The roster sizes on these elite college teams were 100 to 125 kids.
What?
It was an amazing.
Oh,
amazing,
my gosh.
Amazing to watch.
What? So, what do they do with all those kids? Oh, my gosh.
They manicure the field, I'll tell you that. They had these all-dirt fields, and you'd say all-dirt fields, that can't be very good. It's the best all-dirt field you've ever played on. I mean, you could slide on them. The ball stayed down. It was great. What a great education that was, too. And going back to that experience, the first time I ever saw people in the streets wearing masks. And
wow.
Here we go, years later. Okay, here we are. Yeah, Twilight Zone.
Prelude of 11 years later. Wow. So that was the Augusta of baseball
what
fields,
it?
Right? With those
What's
fields?
That
was the Augusta National of baseball fields, it sounds like.
For them, it was. And, we didn't play on much grass. We played on dirt, but these were tremendous facilities. And they lived on campus on these dorms, and the dorms oversaw the baseball fields. So, yeah, they were going to school, but their dorm was overlooking the field. And I thought, wow, can we do that at Vanderbilt? That'd be great.
That's outstanding.
Stumble out of bed and headed you right in the dugout.
No doubt.
That's kind of what we've done for our shows.
Yeah, that's basically life for us
exactly.
Now with our show.
That's what we're doing, yeah.
No doubt.
Tell the wife and kid, going upstairs to do the show. Have a great day. Tim,
yeah,
enjoy the baseball weather. It's going to be nice the next 4 days. You and Maggie continue to be safe, you and the family. And thanks for doing this as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for the opportunity. And you guys all be good with your families as well. Thank you. Right.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks, Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt baseball coach, joining us here on Darren Donick and Chase. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour next.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.